League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hello and welcome to Core Finance. I'm Matt Brown. I'm joined today by Simon Watkins, who is a financial journalist, an author, and a trader. Long business card, but very important for our viewers. So first off, Simon, thank you so much for coming into our studio today.
Thanks for inviting me in.
Absolute pleasure. Now, let's start off. Black Monday. Mm. We're coming up to the 30th anniversary of Black Monday, which is on the 19th of October. And for a few of our viewers who may not have been around when this event occurred, or maybe haven't read it in textbooks, just briefly explain what happened and what went wrong.
Well, Black Monday was the biggest percentage, one-day percentage fall in US stock history, including the 1929 collapse. Mm-hmm. It was, as they say, a 25 sigma event, which means 25 standard deviations away from the average. And that meant, in practical terms, it plunged 22.6% in a very short period of time, which had a knock-on effect to other global stock markets.
So here we are. We're reaching all-time highs, certainly in the US markets. And there are a lot of parallels in the way that the markets are now operating and at these all-time highs comparatively to 30 years ago. Mm. So what parallels have you drawn? Yeah.
Well, one is, as you observe, I mean, valuations are very extended. There is a huge bull run. I'll come back to that in a second on business cycles, but there's a huge bull run. You've got the Dow Jones trading, again, near all-time highs, which it was just prior to Black Monday. UK stock market the same. You've got selected Asian stock markets also doing the same. And it tends to promulgate a notion in the minds of certain types of investor, retail investors in particular, that this bull run will never end. Mm-hmm. It's happy days, as they say in the markets. They do end. The idea that, a 22.6% fall in one day was unthinkable before it happened. Mm-hmm. And markets correct all the time. There are 10% corrections on markets, often. Mm-hmm. But the reason why we can expect a big one at some point very soon is, as you say, the parallels. I mean, the economy of the US, let's just take the US for a second, it's showing uncertain growth.
Mm. It's anemic,
I would say anemic is European growth, but it's not healthy. It's not robust, let's put it like that, as an overused phrase nowadays. It's not robust. I mean, it's sort of, what is it? Well, the headline figure, I think, is about 2.3%, but alongside that, you've got inflation, CPI inflation running at 1.7. CPI, of course, is always understated, so the real rate of inflation, RPI, and the equivalent is much higher. So if you take the two on real growth, stripping out one from the other, then it's, as you say, it is slim. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing, and that corresponds with the pattern that established itself just prior to the crash in Black Monday, which was, I think it was 3.5% GDP growth in the States against 4% CPI inflation. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing. The other side of the economic argument is that at the time, there was much. The Dow Jones plummeted in the afternoon session in the UK, as it would be. But there had, prior to that, being a huge collapse in the Hong Kong stock market overnight.
Yes.
Which a lot of people overlooked. That, in some ways, started the nerves jangling. Mm-hmm. And as you know, when Asia cracks, you often get a repatriation of funds from other stock markets. So that in some ways triggered it slightly. But the key factors that fueled fear about the US economy are also fears about the health of the Asia economy, in particular China. Mm-hmm. And Now, the parallels with that are extensive. I mean, China has a debt-to-GDP ratio, an official debt-to-GDP ratio of, well, it's anybody's guess, really, but it's officially it's 230% of GDP, so debt is running at twice the rate. But actually, that doesn't take into account all the hidden debts in the black, in the black banking system and the wealth management products, WMPs. So actually, the real debt-to-GDP ratio is probably 300 or 400%. Mm-hmm. So that's another factor. And just, I mean, it's mathematically impossible, this notion that China can grow its way out of debt. Mm-hmm. Through economic growth, because it is mathematically impossible. Its debt is growing at twice the rate of its economy. So that's
simple maths. Yeah,
it's simple maths. So that's another factor. The Asian fears. And coming back to what I mentioned about the business cycle, there are long term business cycles, as you know, which last 45 to 60 years, which are. They're sort of what you could call the Kondratiev waves. Mm-hmm. And they are marked by major sea changes in technology. But we're not... You could argue that the information technology curve is moving us into that.
Yes.
But let's forget about that one. The shorter-term business cycles, as defined by the US National Business Economic Research, NBER, typically last 5 years, well, 3 to 5 years from peak to trough. There have been 34 of them since 1857. This is why I get invited to so many dinner parties, as you can gather. and this one that we're in now is the third longest in history, well, since 1857, since yes. records began. It's 99 months, just in case you wanted to know. So that again portends to the fact. If you take that within the fact as well, the corollary fact that you've got this, as you say, anemic growth, mm-hmm. not just in the US but in Europe as well. Yes. Japan, as you know, has always been stifled since the 1980s, yes. And so on. Then there's no growth machine. But against that, you have markets going through the roof.
So we have these asset bubbles, and also we've got to look at volatility in the market, certain political uncertainty. Mm. When you look at back at the crash 30 years ago, you look at bombing in Iran and the tit-for-tat that was going on there, and now we move forward 30 years, fast forward 30 years, we've got a North Korea situation.
Well, volatility obviously is caused by all sorts of things, mainly things that people think, again, are unlikely. There is, as you know, as a trader, there's no such thing as the unthinkable, really. You have to think.
Expect the unexpected.
Expected the unexpected. And, I mean, coming back to the China side of things, moving on from just the debt to GDP ratio, if you look at... You touched on bubbles earlier, and bubbles have a tendency to create extensive market volatility in and of themselves. And the housing bubble, as we know, in that case, the subprime housing bubble in the US, that exacerbated the big financial crisis. I know we're talking about Black Monday, but there's similar parallels.
Yes.
So at that time, the subprime ratio of house prices to purchase prices to income in the US was 6.4 times. All right.
Mm-hmm. 10 now, years on. It's...
No, well, now it's less in the US for various reasons, basically because people have gone bust, and that's a great leveler. But my point is, in China, it's 27 times.
Incredible.
And in the UK, it's 11 times. Mm-hmm. And if you take as well the other major volatility that fed through into the Asian crisis of sort of 87 around there, then in Japan at the time of the big credit bubble in the 80s, when they were just pumping money in to try and resuscitate nominal GDP growth, of which there'd been none for a very long time, That ratio, the housing cost to income ratio, that was only 8 mm-hmm. times. So you talk about 27 times.
In China. And it's incredible when you're talking about, you know, pumping money into the system. So we've had best part of 10 years of all this QE going in, and at some point that's got to come out. And you know, basically gravity, you know, things go up on the basis they're supported. If you withdraw that support, then you know, things can fall, and that can also be an issue.
They can, and I mean, I'll sort of answer your questions the other way around, coming back to, because what you said is absolutely correct, which brings me on, I will come on to that in a second, but that's how you react to crashes.
Yes.
But the other thing, the geopolitical side of things as well, I'll touch on this very briefly, but you had underpinning, adding fuel to the fire and to the volatility mix was the fact that you had in 1986-87, Saudi Arabia, and this is really, the parallels are astonishing if you look at them. The Saudi Arabia withdrew effectively from the stewardship of OPEC in as much as it used to support oil prices, which led to a 50% fall in the oil price. And what did we see at the beginning of 2014? But we saw Saudi not withdraw so much, but force or cajole, persuade, whichever way you want to put it, its neighbours, OPEC members and NOPEC members as well, non-OPEC members, into overproducing to lower the oil price in order to price out the US shale industry, which was nascent at the point, which led to a catastrophic fall from over $105 a barrel of WTI to around 30.
Yes.
So it's exactly the same. And now they're trying to resuscitate. The Saudis are reversed. The Saudis have as much knowledge, really, as a 12-year-old studying economics of how markets work, but in my opinion. But so they reversed the decision, and now they're underproducing now to try and force it up. But of course, the shale industry is more dynamic. They're fitter, leaner. They can break even at $20 a barrel, and they've hedged out all their exposure for about 2 years. So that's fine. And at the same time, you do as well. You have Donald Trump trying to revoke the JCPOA, Joint Committee Plan of Action deal, which was a sort of a deal between the key members of the UN, the Permanent Security Council members, of which there are five, the usual suspects, so China, Russia, France, the US and the UK, plus Germany. And he's trying to undermine that, so that's ratcheted up pressure with Iran as well.
Yes.
Prior to 1987, there'd been the US firing on Iranian ships, Iranians firing on US ships around and about the Strait of Hormuz, which is a key artery for the passage of world oil. So you've got that as well. And you've got North Korea, just to throw into the mix.
Yeah, throw that one in.
Just to throw into the mix. So in terms, the volatility has been managed simply by dint, coming back to your original point, of the fact that you have these oceans of money still within the system that, you know, we had rounds and rounds of QE, quantitative easing from the Fed and indeed, if you remember, from the Bank of England some time ago and ongoing QE in one way or another from the Bank of Japan. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, QE by another name from the European Central Bank.
Yes.
So you've got walls of money trying to find a home. And this really is what is propelling these very bullish, almost near vertical rises in world stock markets, because it is just QE money. And at some point, sorry, but just round off that point, at some point that money will disappear.
Yes. And we're now in a situation where people new to the market are looking to trade. They're saying, well, what can go wrong? It just seems to be onwards and upwards. There's money to be made there in their markets. Be aware. And you've recently written a book, which is The Complete Guide to Successful Financial Markets Trading. And it focuses in on traders potentially new to the market, I believe, and how potentially not to trade, how not to lose money, not necessarily, I believe, how to make money, but how not to lose it.
No, in fact, it does both. I mean, it attempts to do both. And it starts, I mean, it's my fifth book, sort of on a subject which is, you know, how to mitigate against risks by retail traders. And as many of your viewers will know, 90% of retail traders lose all of their money, their investable funds, within the first 90 days of trading. And so,
and that's regardless of a stock market crash. This
that's
is
irrelevant.
Just,
that's even if it's if it's bullish as it is now, it's still the same. And so my books and this book as well aim to allow traders to mitigate risks and to optimize the chances of generating some alpha returns. And it starts out with the basics, hence the complete bit, which is, you know, things like how to place an order. And I'm talking here about on spread betting sites, because that is the main portal through which people will, retail traders will start. But the same applies if you're dealing directly with a broker, if he's doing what you tell him to do, you know. And it involves, you know, placing stop loss orders. And you would not believe, I mean, you're a trader yourself, you must come across people who say, well, I don't bother putting orders on. And you think, well, why? What on earth are you thinking? So, you know, it's how to put stop loss orders on, because what a lot of people don't understand is that you can literally, you can cap your losses at whatever level you want. And it then combines that with, on the reward side of things, you really need to, if you take into account technical analysis, you know, you can, there are proponents and detractors from technical analysis, but one thing it does, which is it shows psychological points at which people either buy more than they sell, yes, as a market as a whole, or sell more than they buy. So it gives what are called support and resistance levels, and you can then, they can be used to place orders. So that, you know, you can chop out of a stop loss order, you can chop out of a loss making position, or to gauge the reward on it. And the reward, I would say, you should not go into a trade unless you stand you stand the likelihood of making four times the amount that you could possibly lose, based on, I don't know if that's what you think as well.
So, stops and limits.
Exactly the same. And so, you know, you should place your orders accordingly. And then from there, it builds out, once the retail or any trader has taken those lessons on board, and it combines things like hedging, and which can be done cross-asset-wise and so forth, then what to go for in terms of how you look for market opportunities, and they can be macroeconomic. For example, in our in the current scenario, for example, you know, I'm not going to give direct recommendations, obviously, but one might think that given the problems that the oil sector is facing, you might be looking at supply cutoffs, which might force the price higher. Is the way I'm trying to get people to who read the book to think, you know, alternatively. You can sell Chinese banks directly, but a better way perhaps of doing it, given currency considerations, you know, the renminbi is still not fully floating, is to do it via Hong Kong or proxies or Chinese bank proxies, because then you're taking a negative bet on the solidity of the Chinese banking system, which is a bit like taking a bet on the solidity of a trifle. If you're short, you're probably going to win.
Understood. So it's all in your book, which is it's been published, I believe.
It is coming out on the 19th of October, I believe.
Oh, so very apt date.
It's very very apt date.
Fantastic. And it's available through
Amazon and Apple, and also on the ADVFN website.
Fantastic. So check that out, viewers. But a very interesting historical lesson, but also the lots of lessons that we can, and viewers and traders can, take forward. And hopefully we don't get a crash, but obviously bear that in mind when trading. So stay safe if you are trading. And in the meantime, Simon Watkins, thank you very much for joining us today on Core Finance.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.